Game 29, at Julius Erving. There's no way I couldn't tribute the first player to make guys truly acknowledge their own brands, and the greatest player to intertwine our franchises. Word is, at underscore Big J underscore, wears a fro because of him.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily fantasy basketball podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at BasketballMonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at Redrock underscore Bball. Today we're going to be looking back at the 11 games on Wednesday, some curious decisions, some injury news of course for us to get to as well, thankfully a relatively light day in terms of injuries, and then we're going to preview the four games for Thursday across the NBA. Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
That is a fantastic idea. You know where we're going to start.
Monstrous line of the night.
It goes to, perhaps controversially, Thad Young of the Indiana Pacers. Young was absolutely fantastic in this game. 25 points in 34 minutes. He hit a three. He had 11 rebounds, but he supplemented that with four assists, five steals, and a block with brilliant percentage. 64% from the field and 75% from the line. Young has been the 12th best player over the last week and the 28th best player over the last 2 weeks. Numbers which I didn't think he still had in him. You're really bringing it with the steal numbers, but more importantly, the efficiency. He was at 49% from the field last season. He's shooting 55 over the last 7 games and at 74 from the line. Last season, he was 49 and 60, which really two pretty significant negatives in, well, actually, the field goal percentage, not a negative, but it's not a huge boost as it is this season. And the steals just keep on keeping on, especially over the last bit of time. He has benefited from Victor Oladipo's absence, but today's game, Oladipo is back, and we still saw big minutes from Young, 34 minutes of them to be precise. And that's also back-to-back double-doubles for Young, but back-to-back four assist games. And in fact, in three of his last four games, he's tallied four assists. Now, that's not something that he really does very much at all. So I think we could be looking at that as a little bit fluky, averaged under two assists for each of the last three seasons. And to be fair, this season, he's at only 1.5 assists. But really ramping that up over the last couple of games, and along with many big men in the NBA, they're seeing their assist numbers rise. So he's putting up strong value. I'm not necessarily convinced that it's going to stick at this level, the efficiency. Even that sort of playing time where he's averaged 35 minutes a game over the last four, I'm not sure that's going to stick. But for now, you add him in 12-team leagues, you see where it goes. And he's especially helpful if you are looking for those steals because he is a real specialist in that area. Let's move on to the next one.
Waiver wire line of the night.
It goes to Nemanja Bjelica of the Sacramento Kings. We know that Bjelica was one of the hottest free agent ads at the start of the season. He's dropped down to 34% on Yahoo because the numbers had really, really dried up. But today he played 29 minutes. He had 25 points with four triples, five rebounds, three assists and two blocks. So contributed right across the box score. He is still a top 100 player for the season, but over the last 2 weeks, outside the top 120, and the minutes have dropped under 24 per game there. He's still shooting really well, 55%, by far a career high, 88 from the line, by far a career high as well, and doing it while only shooting 32% from three. So it's not like fluky, unsustainable shooting. The two-pointers probably are 71% over those last seven games. That's unlikely to stick. I look at Bjelica more as a 14 to 16 team league player whose minutes were definitely declining prior to these games. He had a couple of decent performances when Marvin Bagley was limited with his back. But a guy that has been great value for the Kings, but I'm not sure that the 12-team league value is necessarily going to stick with Bjelica despite this performance. You could stream him, you could have a look to do that. They're basically eliminating Justin Jackson out of the rotation now. Only 8 minutes in each of the last two games, and that's giving some more minutes to Bjelica there also because they're playing Jackson as a bit of a small ball four when, of course, Bjelica is a superior player. And Bagley's still getting his high 20s in terms of minutes, which is useful. We'd prefer a little bit more for Bags. But at this point, I think we leave Bjelica on the waiver wire in most scenarios, unless it's really as a stream option. I think that's the best case to look at him. The deep league player of the night is Furkan Korkmaz of the Philadelphia 76ers. With Jimmy Butler out with that groin injury, Furkan got the start. And he made sure that the Sixers coaches didn't regret it. Now, I always thought it was a pretty dumb... It's in general, especially outside of, say, the top 10, I think it's dumb to decline a rookie option. Now, guys like Jahlil Okafor and those higher picks, Dragan Bender, we're talking with the revised rookie scale. They're pretty big cap hits and a decent chunk of salary. So I understand declining those guys when they're not good. But when you got a guy like Korkmaz, who was going to make, what, $2 million or something in his third season, and you decline that, that's a pretty questionable decision by Brett Brown. I don't know if it was a Brown or Brand. I think it was probably Elton Brand at that point who declined that rookie option. Onto the numbers that Korkmaz put up: 18 points in 35 minutes with 2 triples, 3 rebounds, 6 assists, and 3 steals. Now, when he came, or when he was drafted, he was very young, stayed in Europe for one season. I liked him then. I have soured on him a little bit, but these last couple of games have been super impressive. Back-to-back 18-point games, the 6 assists. I don't know where that came from.
A surprise, to be sure, but a welcome one.
As were the 3 steals, and he has shot at least 57% in 2 consecutive games, really nailing the threes at a significantly high rate, only 34% on the season. But yeah, going at a strong rate here. As long as Butler is out, you could look to stream Korkmaz. I'd probably be more interested in streaming TJ McConnell or even Landry Shamet. There's just an element of flukiness in what Korkmaz is doing with that high shooting, 58 and 57 in the 2 games from the field. But supplementing it with rebounds one day, steals and assists the next day, that's the sort of thing that makes a more valuable fantasy guy, because if the shot doesn't fall, then some other things can come his way. And he played 35 minutes in this start, which I believe is his first career start in the NBA. Yes, it is. So some strong performances. He's had 6 double-figure scoring games this season after having none all of last season, so he's clearly stepped it up, and he looks to be a solid enough rotation player. Not saying he's actually even going to be a rotation guy every night, but he's looked really strong for the Sixers, and he's got some short-term value, you know, over these next couple of games while Butler is out, but hard to find a real significant long-term role for Furkan Korkmaz. But rostered in 1% of leagues, so 20s, 18s, 16 teams, you want to have a look at him, get the value while Butler's out. It might be a week or so, we don't know, and see what happens. But I'd prioritize those other guys, like especially McConnell, over Korkmaz in 12-team formats while Butler is out. But again, Korkmaz might actually end up being the better guy out of that group. That's just the way that I would look at it. The next one.
Young gun of the night.
It's his teammate. It is Benny Simmons of the Philadelphia 76ers. Simmons played 35 minutes and he had 22, 8, and 7 and brought the defense to 4 steals and 2 blocks. He was 60% from the field, was Simo, and also really strong from the line, 4 of 5. I thought he'd be able to take a significant step up in his free throws this season. He's improved. He's gone from 56 to 58. So it's not a big, big step up. And it is still a big issue given how often he goes to the line. But good to see a solid game from him today. He's still the 31st ranked player this season. The numbers are almost the same as last season. Marginally fewer assists, marginally more rebounds, slightly fewer steals, you know, 0.2 points less per game. Very, very similar numbers. You know, field goal percentage up as well. So it's been a bit of a disappointment from Simmons just in terms of not taking a step forward and not taking a big improvement in his free throws and, of course, not hitting a three-pointer. But he's just doing what he does as that second-round-ish, you know, probably, you know, mid-second-round guy in a punt free throw build, which is what you really needed to be going into with Simmons if you were looking to draft him, given his issues there, of course. Guys, today's episode is sponsored by Action Heat. Christmas is just around the corner, 12 days to go until Christmas. Start opening your 12-day advent calendars. I got a great advent calendar, actually, from my son, which nothing to do with Action Heat. I'll talk about that in a sec. Action Heat is clothing that is battery heated, perfect for the winter environs that a lot of you guys live in. Heat on demand at the touch of a button. You can control your own environment with Action Heat. It is engineered to safely and efficiently deliver heat via the heating panel, similar to what you'd find in a heated car seat. They can reach temperatures of up to 135 degrees, powered by rechargeable 5-volt lithium-ion batteries, and they can last up to 12 hours on each charge. You can even charge it while you're wearing it by using a device such as your phone. Perfect for any friend who likes spending their time in the outdoors during these cold winter months. You can get jackets, socks, gloves, hats, or even underwear, including the heated base layer shirts and long johns, staying warm and cozy from head to toe with Action Heat. And we've got a special deal for all listeners to Locked On Fantasy Basketball. You can save 20% off your entire order. Go to actionheat.com/lockedon or use the coupon code at checkout, Locked On, to save 20%. Stay toasty warm while you enjoy all of your outdoor activities this winter with Action Heat. And we thank them for sponsoring this podcast. All right, let's move on to the next award of the day. I tell a man's not hot. There weren't too many real dud performances, so unfortunately Jeremy Lamb gets the dud of the night. 35 minutes for Lamb, 13 points, 4 rebounds and 2 assists. And this is one of those things that even I had to catch myself when looking at this. And you look at it and you go, Josh, he scored 13 points. How could he be the dud of the night? But we have to remember when we're looking at fantasy value, 13 points is below average. It's not much below average. Average is for a 12-team league is about 14.5 to 15 points. So 13 points looks, hey, it's good. He didn't score 5 points. 13 points is fine, but it is a below average contribution. And in fact, Lamb's stats for this entire game, every stat except for free throw percentage is below average. And that's why he's your dud of the night. 13, 4, and 2 with a 000 and that harmful 4 of 13 shooting from the field. Nothing really to worry about. Although, over the last 2 weeks, Lamb finds himself outside the top 120. The field goal percentage, which has been pretty strong all season, is still staying at a decent level. But over those last 2 weeks, he's averaging 15-6 with 1.2 steals and 1.2 assists. It's more that those assists have dropped off. He's not really blocking any shots. He's not helping in the peripheral numbers. So when you look 15-6, you go, they're nice. But for fantasy, they're just not massively impactful. And when your free throws go from 88%, which is where Lamb is on the season, down to 78.9, well, that's his biggest fantasy impact categories, his free throws. When that drops off by 10 percentage points, then you lose your biggest category and you can drop 40, 50 spots pretty quickly. And that's exactly what has happened to Jezza Lamb here over the last couple of weeks. It just shows you how fleeting ranks and value in that can be and how things can change it so aggressively. And that's why I always like to reference, what is a player's best category? What is their number one category? Is it sustainable to stay at that level? Now, Lamb is a good free throw shooter, but you have an off day in that or an off week in that, and it really drops what you end up doing. And that's the same with things like steals or field goal percentage. Or, it's a big case to me. When turnovers are your best category, you're generally going to be subpar in all those other areas. And that doesn't make for a great fantasy option. So, yeah, Lamb is your dud of the night. Nothing I don't think to really worry too much about. But it is worth mentioning that those numbers, they have dipped just that little bit over the last couple of weeks. The plus-minus goats of the day, the best and the worst net rating. The best went to Dougie McDirt, a +139.5 for the Indiana Pacers. McDirt has had, I think he's had the goat of the night a couple of times on the good side and bad side this season. While he does absolutely jack shit from a fantasy point of view. While the worst net rating went to Zach Collins of the Portland Trailblazers. He was a -95 in their game today. So Collins is your worst net rating. Of course, nobody is, surely nobody is still holding Zach Collins in 12-10 leagues. Again, just another one of those instances where you can look at it and go, well, a guy who's hot at the start of the season and a lot of it seemed unsustainable, like a 6-block and then a 7-of-7 shooting night, not going to continue, unlikely for his value to remain. And we've seen that from him drop off considerably after that red-hot start to begin the season. Let's look at some injuries. Al Horford's got knee tendonitis. He's going to miss the next couple of games. I'm a bit worried here about Horford. I'm not dropping him. I'm not rushing to grab Aaron Baines or Vanilla Tice or even the rock DJ Robbie Williams in anything outside of deeper formats, but it's a little bit worrisome. This is an ongoing rest-only type of injury for Horford. He was a guy who I mentioned in the Sal High show the other day. And guys, make sure you are subscribing to this podcast because every day I'm putting out calling it the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Fast Break, a 15 to 20 minute show that comes out a couple of hours before the games during the week, covering just quick check-ins and buy low, sell high, waiver wire ads, top 20 players, that sort of stuff. So make sure you are subscribing so you make sure you never miss those Fast Break episodes as well. I talked about Horford, who was like the 13th best player over a stretch of 3 games, saying that wasn't going to continue, and now this knee injury's come in, which I didn't know about at the time, but it's here at this point, and it is a real concern for him moving forward. The little dog Glenn Robinson's out for a couple of weeks with his ankle. We saw the duck, Luke Kennard. He started today alongside the shark, Bruce Brown. Baby shark, Kennard struggled a little bit. Robinson, of course, needs to be dropped. I don't even think he shouldn't have been rostered anyway, really. But I don't think that Robinson is even going to get back into the rotation when he necessarily returns. And all those guys like Brown and Kennard and Galloway and Stan Johnson, they're more your 14 to 16 team league guys. I do want to talk Goran Dragic, whose knee has flared up again. He missed today's game. I'm really worried about Dragic. He was someone who I thought was significantly overrated at the beginning of the season. His ADP was sky high. I had him about the 100 mark, and even that's probably too high at this point. I'm worried. He's an older guy who we saw last season. His biggest fantasy strength through his peak seasons was that 50-51% field goal percentage. His ability to finish at the rim cratered last season. His field goal percentage dropped. And when we talked to the guys at Locked On Heat in the season preview, I think it was Wes that we had on. Actually, we might have had both Wes and David. I can't remember exactly who was on the show for the preview this season. We talked about, you know, what's going on with Dragic. Is this the start of a decline? And we both seemed to think, yes, it was. His knee's a real worry here to me. I don't think that he is a must-roster 10-team league guy at this point. And he's pretty bloody borderline 12-team. I thought fully healthy, he might struggle to be a top 100 player. And he's not healthy. I do think it's a significant problem for him moving forward, and it would depend on who I'd be looking to add off the waiver wire, but I wouldn't be considering him an absolute must-hold, must-roster guy. I've got him projected to be the 119th best player from here on out, and so far he's been the 137th ranked guy. That's, you know, that's where I see him, and that's not as valuable a player. This is a guy who's at 41% shooting from the field this season. Yeah, it's really taking a turn, and I think that that is knee-related, it's age-related. I'm not really sure it's coming back. Chandler Parsons, he's effectively cooked out another 2 weeks with this knee soreness. I don't think he's going to be getting back into the rotation at any point. Well, JJ Barea suffered an ankle injury. Originally, I thought he wouldn't be able to play on Thursday. He said if the swelling goes down, he's questionable. I don't think on a back-to-back that Carlisle's going to push it. And then the big injury news of the day is Jonas Valanciunas suffering a broken or dislocated thumb. Draymond tried to slap the ball away, knocked his thumb. He was in considerable pain. I would imagine that we're talking weeks, not days here for Valanciunas. He had, you know, struggled for, it was awesome to start the season, struggled for a stretch, started to come back on the last couple of games in a 10-team league. Again, you want to wait until we hear the injury news and timeline and that at this point, but I think you should be considering him a drop guy. And even in 12-team leagues, what's his upside? Maybe top 110? Maybe? Is that worth holding on without an injured reserve spot? Now, people will often ask me, Josh, do I hold on to Valanciunas? I've got an IR spot. Yes. Not Valanciunas, but it's another play. Yes. Every single time you do it, you hold them. And then the decision comes when someone else gets injured. Well, which guy is more valuable in there? And then what timing is it as to, you know, does the Valanciunas come out of IR in 3 weeks' time and he's got 1 week left to return? Then you can maybe deal with that 1 week of him on the bench. But if you've got an open IR spot, it's not a question. You just add him into IR, simple as that. And then when your next question comes up, if someone else becomes eligible, then you decide, okay, who do I drop? What do I do here? Can I deal with this for 3 days, 2 weeks, whatever it is? But if you've got an open, and it sounds simple, but the amount of questions I get about it is, it's pretty staggering. If you've got an open IR spot, you put the bloke in there. Unless he's ruled out for the season, Damian Jones style, you just put the bloke there, simple as that. I don't think that should be all that confusing, but apparently it's not something that's common knowledge. So it is important that that I do mention that. Guys, if you do have a company that is looking for a new way to reach customers, like the fine folks at Action Heat, you could be mentioned right now. Podcast listeners are 60% more likely to interact with the sponsors that they hear on their favorite podcasts. Our demographic is 98% male and higher educated and higher earning than your traditional media audiences. Have your company sponsor this podcast by emailing me at redrockfantasybasketball@gmail.com. All right, let's swing into the games now. There are 11 of them for us to talk about, so a lot of action to get to here. Some interesting stuff happening across the NBA, as there pretty much always is. The first game of the day was the Milwaukee Bucks falling to the Indiana Pacers, 97-113. Giannis was back from that neck injury, only played 31 minutes. He's been slumping a little bit. This is, again, me and Kyle debated this on the podcast in the preseason, saying we didn't see Giannis as a top one. He was getting picked at number one in some drafts. We didn't see him as even a top five guy because we were worried about what Budenholzer would do with minutes and the deficiencies in Giannis's game, like lack of threes and lack of free throws. And I think at this point, we have been, we've been proven, well, not right, but we've been justified. Maybe that's, no one's proven right or wrong, but we've been justified in having that caution with Gianni. Brooke Lopez had 15 points and he had the rare 4-3-4 block combination. He has been a great last round pick, while Bledsoe getting it back on track, 26 with 6 assists and 2 steals. George Hill minutes have gone up, 22 minutes here, only 4 points. Nothing to see there with him outside of deeper leagues. And Malcolm Brogdon, he wasn't great in this one, nor was Chris Middleton. Now, Chris Middleton is the ultimate buy low at this point. Someone legitimately asked me whether they should drop him and whether the Middleton that we saw at the start of the season was fake and this is actually who he is. No, because we've seen it for 3 or 4 years that he is the guy from the start of the season, not whatever's happening here at the moment. Now, there's clearly some tension between Middleton and the organization. I say clearly, let me rephrase that. It appears to me that there is tension between Middleton and the organization. So that could be playing a part of it. So much of basketball is psychological, and performance is psychological in that regard as well. An unhappy environment, shout out to you, Jim Boylan, do not always bring out the best in players. In most cases, they don't. So it is worth mentioning, but I'd be buying real low because, hey, in 2% of the people or leagues that people listen to this podcast, there might be someone who go, well, Middleton's trash, he's not good, that was a fluke, I'm getting rid of him. And you might be able to acquire him for Juancho Hernangómez. That's ludicrous. But that, yeah, you might be able to acquire him for Bojan Bogdanović. I'm using a player from that same game. Someone on a hot streak, Thad Young. You might be able to do that. You probably won't. But hey, it never hurts to ask. Well, sometimes it can. Brogo struggled as well. Nothing to really worry about there. But interestingly, Sterling Brown in ahead of George Hill, ahead of Pat Connaughton, who was out of the rotation, ahead of the big Ragu, Dante DiVincenzo, and ahead of Tone Snell. Something for deep leagues to watch. Onto the Pacers, Miles Turner, man, Jesus, he is on fire. 23 points with 4 triples and 3 blocks. The rebounding numbers did dip, but his usage went sky high, 32% in this game. That's not likely to continue. Oladipo did return, 12, 10, and 6. Good to see him back out there. And with Oladipo back, Tyreek played 15 minutes. If anyone has him in 12-team leagues, you can clearly move on from him. Collison, 3 points with 7 assists for Dazza in his 29 minutes. I did suggest that maybe his value would disappear when Oladipo returned. I'd probably hold one more, but he was shit before Oladipo got hurt. He was great when Oladipo was injured, and one game sample size means nothing, but it's just trending back to what it was before. Well, Sabonis is in a little bit of a slump as well, 12, 10, and 3, not suggesting we drop him by any stretch. The other guy who was strong here was Bogdanović, 16 and 4 with 3 triples. Got to the line still. I'd expect somewhat of a decrease in his performance coming up. Next up, the Brooklyn Nets with a huge win on the road against the Philadelphia 76ers, 127-124. Spencer Dinwiddie dropped 39 with 5 assists and 4 triples. Huge game from him. He's a must-roster player. While, quietly, the blue swimmer, Alan Crabb, now I shit on this guy all the time because I don't think he's that good, but I'll happily tell you when I don't think a player is good, but when they put up a good performance, because he's a top 70 player over the last week. 16 points with 4 triples on 50% shooting. Now that 50% is coming on the back of 57% from 3, not likely to continue, but even over the last month, he's hitting 3 threes per game, and that is useful as a 3-point streaming option, even in 12-team leagues. Not a must-roster guy by any stretch, but someone to pay attention to. While my man, Rowdy Rodions Kurucs, 13 points in 19 minutes with 3 steals. This guy is going to be a top 100 player at some point in the next 5 seasons, would be my guess. This goes out to you Dynasty guys. He's forced Shabazz Napier out of the rotation. I wouldn't be stunned if Jared Dudley or Damari Carroll lose playing time to Kurucs. He is bloody good, and I think he's going to be really strong for this team. Rondé had 4 steals. That's great. 3 points in 22 minutes is not what you need. He is not a 10-teamer, and he's probably not a 12-team league guy. While D'Angelo Russell struggled, and I've got to give a mention to Jarrett Allen, who played only 16 minutes because he was massively struggling with Joel Embiid. So that minutes distribution between Allen and Davis is not something that's going to happen all that often. On to the Sixers, Embiid had 33, 17, and 6. While we've talked Simmons and Korkmaz already, but TJ McConnell, who I've talked about already, 17 points with 4 assists on 8 of 10 shooting. 29 minutes is probably the most important stat there for Tej. While Landry Shamet had 3 triples in his 20 minutes, just like an Alan Crabb who's available in more leagues. Shamet only rostered in 1% of leagues, so he is available in every format, basically. 16-team leagues, I think you have to have Shamet. I don't know why he's not rostered in more leagues than that. TJ McConnell, 2%. Korkmaz, 1%. There's value in these Sixers guys, so you can go and have a look at those players. Next up, we look at the Detroit Pistons and the Charlotte Hornets. The Hornets get the victory, 1 point, 108-107. Andre Drummond, the free throws again, but 14 and 13 with 6 blocks is nice. Well, Langston Galloway, is it possible? Are we passing the baton over?
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
Not quite. I'm still going to give it to the Chief, but man, he goes from good to horrible to good again. 17, 3 points. Let's try that again because English is not my first language. Clearly, 17 points with 3 triples, 2 assists, and 2 steals for Galloway. He's rostered in only 2% of leagues. He needs to be rostered in more than that. And in deeper leagues, you've got to look there. While Reggie Jackson had 18 points. Blake Griffin back from arrest, 26, 10, and 7. While the Shark, Bruce Brown, baby shark, 8 and 6, but bringing the defense. 1 steal and 2 blocks. Had 2 assists as well. He's only really a deeper league guy, but I don't mind him long term. While the Duck, Luke Kennard, started, it wasn't the best night. 6 and 4, he's just a watch guy at this point. Kemba had a really strong game despite the piss poor field goal percentage. He was 8 of 25, 32%, but 31, 8, and 9 is really strong after some down games from him. Well, we had 38 minutes of Marvin Williams because Michael Kidd-Gilchrist was a scratch that we found out 5 minutes into the first quarter. Oh, yeah, by the way, he's not playing. Like, anyone want to tell us he's A, not on the court warming up, he's not in uniform, he's inactive on the list? Why are the Hornets tweeting this out 5 minutes into the game? This shit needs to change across the NBA. And, you know, I tweeted this out and said, oh man, no one had him in their DFS lineup. That's not the point. Like, it's I don't care if anyone had him or not. Look, just transparency would be absolutely fantastic and rules that should be followed. I don't know. Maybe that's too much to ask. Cody Zeller, 12 and 9 in 27 minutes. He is really staking a claim as a boring ass 12-team league guy. I'm always going to reference this, but it's Taj Gibson, what Taj Gibson did last season. Solid enough numbers, zero upside, but he's pushing up at the moment and he's looking pretty solid. Well, I hate to say it, I'm pulling the pin on Nick Batum. I've already pulled it in 10s, and in 12s, I'm done. I don't see it changing. He'll have an occasional good game, but we're talking 80% shit at the moment. The offense is not focused on him. He's not aggressive. He's done. I'm out. I'm out on Nick Batum, and he is a bloke that I've loved as a fantasy contributor for a long time, and I am officially out on Nick Batum. Next up, let's look at the Boston Celtics and the Washington Wizards. It went to overtime. The Celtics win 130 to 125. No Jaylen Brown, who was out with an illness in this game, and Gordon Hayward and Al Horford were also out. Hayward also ill. Kyrie was great, 38, 3, and 7, while Marcus Smart played 39 minutes and put up a ripper of a line, 18, 5, and 3 with 3 steals. When Jaylen's back, it does really temper what Smart can do, and I'd leave him as a stream-type option, or really specific builds, more of a 14-teamer. While Marcus Morris, I saw someone tweet today that he's been the Celtics' best player, and I was ready to laugh at it, and then went, you know what? Consistency-wise, he probably has been. Now, I think Kyrie's been the team's best player, but Marcus Morris has been the team's second best player this season, and that is absolutely stunning. 27-9, you continue to roster him. I don't believe it's going to continue, but we're almost 30 games in now, and you've got to give credit to that. Terry Rozier played 35 minutes, had 10 points and 4 assists. I don't think I'm probably going to cop shit for this. I don't think he's a more overrated player in the NBA than Terry Rozier. I just don't think he's as good as what he thinks. I think he's a worse Reggie Jackson. Man, can't wait to get him. He's going to be awesome as our starting point guard. And he's not. I don't think he's going to be a good starting point guard when he ever gets that opportunity. I just don't think he's that good. I think he's got a good personality. I like the way he plays. I like his hustle. He's a great rebounder. I honestly don't think he's that good. I think he's overhyped significantly. The Rock DJ Robbie Williams had 2 blocks in his 14 minutes. He's going to find it hard to find a regular role when everyone's healthy, but it's good that he got 14 minutes even with Bainesy healthy. It helped that Vanilla Tice was in foul trouble, but he's definitely a name to watch. Well, Jason Tatum continues to not step forward in his second season. 12 and 12 on 16 shots, just not taking that step forward or the progression like he and Donovan Mitchell and Ben Simmons, none of them have really taken any sort of step forward. On to the Wizards. John Wall was back. Played 41 minutes, Scott Brooks, 34 points, 6 rebounds, 13 assists, 2 steals and a block, and then hurt his foot at the end. And the free throws continue to suck. And again, we're 30 games in. Maybe he's just a shit free throw shooter and a punt free throw guy now. Not quite punt, not Russell Westbrook punt, but shit. I don't know. I don't know what's going on with it. But we're worried a little bit about the foot. That's a concern that he heard at the end of the game in overtime. We'll see what happens there. Otto Porter was out, so Jeff Green started.
My name is Jeff.
Anytime you can get 45 minutes out of Jeff Green, you got to do it. 22 and 10 with 2 threes, a steal, and a block. And this is our monthly big Jeff Green game. With Porter back, or when Porter's back, he's not going to be able to do that. Oubre backed up his strong game with another strong game. And it didn't come on 60% shooting, so that's a positive. He's really increased his defensive stats this season, which is an impressive thing. A guy who I thought was really not a good fantasy player. And I'm still not convinced he's a good player, but he's putting together some strong numbers. Still, though, over the last 2 weeks, he's not a top 100 player, and that's in 29 minutes while scoring 15 points on 48% shooting. Because he just gets no assists, low rebounds, doesn't take or hit many threes, and that always does limit him. Now, today's line is good, and he's worth having a bit of a flyer on, but the decision's going to be who you drop to add him, and if he's got any value when Porter returns, which he probably doesn't. Thomas Bryant is doing impressive-ish sort of things, but not enough to be a must-roster guy. While Markieff Morris, who had that strong run when Dwight Howard was first out, has cooled off, I would still have him as a 12-team league guy at this point in the season. Next up, we have the New York Knicks and the Cleveland Cavaliers. You're going to be stunned. Absolutely flawed, but David Fizdale changed his starting lineup again, and we had the Fort Kevin Knox going in. I've got no problem with that move whatsoever. Knox played 33 minutes. He literally should have started from opening night, and he was slated to, of course, until a day before the season when Fizdale decided to reverse back on everything he had said in the weeks leading up and brought him off the bench. Another solid game, 19-7, added two blocks, had three threes. That's pretty strong performance. But again, the ranking and the overall value that he provides is not great. Over the last six games, Kevin Knox has played 31 minutes, so minutes haven't been a problem. He's the 155th ranked player, despite averaging 16-7 with two triples. Because he's shooting 61% from the line, 40% from three, two assists, half a steal, half a block. Negatives in many areas and big negatives in some areas. But in saying all of this, a bloke getting 30 plus minutes, who's going to be able to bludgeon his way into points, like the Padawan Colin Sexton, is worth rostering. You've got to deal with those negatives, and you've got to understand that he is not a great fantasy guy. And so I wouldn't drop someone like Kyle Anderson for him, who contributes in multiple areas. And remember, points are as valuable as assists, are as valuable as steals, are as valuable as blocks. They just come in different quantities. And that's what influences overall value. Nilakina, left for dead, and now he's back. 16-3-4, a steal and a block in 24 minutes. I don't know what this means. I don't know what it means for him when Trey Burke returns or when Alonzo Trier returns. I get the feeling he's going to be up and down all season, and I'm not adding him, but it is encouraging. While Hardaway had 20 points, and Moutier, who had played 22 minutes the game before, played 31 here, 16-8-7 with two steals. Bad efficiency, and you know, worth a look in 12 teams, but I don't have confidence in what his playing time is going to be, so I'd probably leave him as more of a deeper league guy. Remember when Damo Dotson was the hot guy? Oh, you got to add him, man. He's going to get all these big minutes. It's going to be awesome. He played him 19 minutes. Now, foul trouble limited him, but the production and that unsustainable shooting was unsustainable. Who knew? 4 points with a steal and a block for Damo, still just a watch sort of a guy, while Hazonia only played 11 minutes in the bench role. I imagine that when Trier and Burke returns, Hazonia won't be playing. Same with Courtney Lee. On to the Cavs. Now, I was getting ready to lose my absolute shit at Larry Drew today, because I did mention this yesterday, that there was every chance that he was going to start Channing Frye or Ante Zizic ahead of Larry Nance, even with Tristan Thompson out. And he did. He started Channing Frye for 100% zero reason. There's no need for it at all. But as I do preach this all the time, it doesn't really matter if he starts or not, if he's playing the minutes. Now, he may not play the minutes every game, but Frye got 15 and Nance got 33, and I can't complain about that. Nance had 3 points, but 11 rebounds, 7 assists, 3 steals, 3 blocks. Thompson's out for the next 4 weeks. Nance should be the guy getting 30-plus a night for the rest of the season. He won't be, but he should be, and he needs to be added in all 12-team leagues. Jordy Clarkson had 28, 5, and 2 in 34 minutes. He's up and down. While Rocket Rodney Hood, low minutes the last couple of games. Had 23 points, so strong shooting in this one, but the minutes are way down, not a 12-teamer. While Alec Burks, turns out maybe he is just that guy that he was at Utah all those years. 1 point in 26 minutes. If you added him in 12-team leagues, I reckon you can move on. Now, someone left a shady comment to me saying that I was biased because I don't call Matthew Dellavedova shit and I don't say that he's the worst player in the NBA. Now, he's not very good. He's clearly not the worst player in the NBA. Luke Kornet played in this game, so there you go. But Dally, what's going on with Dally in Cleveland? 15 points, 3 triples, 4 rebounds, 3 assists and a steal. I'm not saying we add Dellavedova everywhere, but he's in the rotation now, and he wasn't in Milwaukee. You're looking at him as 18-teamers, but he's rostered, in 0% of Yahoo leagues. Zero. So, 20-teamers, 18-teamers, 30-teamers, go and add Dally, because I think he's going to be a part of this rotation. While the young bull, Colin Sexton, had 19 points on 56% shooting, that's good. But nothing else is. 1 point, 1 triple, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, no other numbers. This is the problem he is. Still a must-roster guy who is rostered in only 64% of Yahoo leagues. Chetty Osman, he's pretty Nick Batumi at the moment. I think I'm done with him. In 10-team leagues, he's toast. In 12-teamers, I'm not holding. I think there are better options out there. I'm just not having the faith in him turning it around at this point. So apologies to you, Chetty. On to the next game, the Oklahoma City Thunder and the New Orleans Pelicans. The Pelicans 118 and the Thunder 114. Paulie George, Russell Westbrook, Dennis Schroeder, and Steve Adams all scored 20-plus or 20 or more points. Georgie had 25, 11, and 5. Westbrook had 26 and 7 with 4 steals and 2 blocks on good efficiency, although can't hit free throws, 2 of 5 from the line, 40%. Schroeder had 24, 3, and 4. And I've got to give props to Dennis Schroeder because we hear all the narratives all the time. oh man, you ever go play next to Westbrook, your stats drop. Well, for a start off, that's bullshit because Kevin Durant put up pretty good stats. Paul George is putting up pretty good stats. And Dennis Schroeder is actually improved on what he was able to do in Atlanta. Now, some of that is without Westbrook, some of that is with, but he has been able to, you know, really step up his efficiency, especially of late. Struggled a little bit in the early part when Westbrook wasn't there, but the efficiency has really taken a step forward. So, you know, not a guy who was a starter and sulked, came in playing a solid role, and is a valuable fantasy commodity at this point, the 74th ranked player overall, and probably someone you should be rostering in all leagues. Not certain it's going to stick all season, but he's been impressive, and he's definitely outperformed what I projected he would do this season. Jeremy Grant, he's looking a little thin at the moment. 7-5 in 26 minutes. He is as unexciting as they get. If you want to make a switch for another unexciting stiff white man like Cody Zeller, you can go and do that. I think they're not far off being similar players. On to the Pelicans. Tone Davis went to the locker room and still played 40 minutes. 44-18 with two steals and a block, while Solomon Hill brought the defense, three steals and a block in his 34 minutes. Drew Holiday, 20-10. The efficiency for him has dipped a little bit, while Timmy Frazier, the assists stream specialist, also added 9 rebounds and 2 steals, but he is a 12-team league guy, if not just for the assists alone. Well, Julius Randle, man, Matt Smith had a great comment today. I can't even remember what the tweet was, but it was something like, Julius Randle is the king of making easy things look hard. And that's just how he plays. You just look at him and go, what is he doing? What is he doing? And then it goes in, and it really shouldn't be that complicated. But it is, and it's successful. Another 22-12. The free throws were a real issue. And of course, this came without Nick Mirotic around, who was out for a couple of games with that ankle problem. We'll see how long it takes him to actually return to action. Next up, the Portland Trailblazers and the Memphis Grizzlies. The Grizzlies win 92-83. CJ McCollum does very well against Memphis. He dropped another 40 on 59% shooting. Great game from him. While the Chief, Al-Farouq Aminu, the original.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
He was medium. 10-4 with 2 steals and 2 triples. He's a 12-team league guy at this point. Evan Turner played 32 minutes with Mo Harkless resting, while Jake Layman played his 14 minutes. Remember that game he had 2 games ago where he went bananas against the Suns? Turns out that's not him. Shocker. Yusuf Nurkic had 1 point. No, he didn't. He had 2 points. He made 1 field goal. He missed 14, but he made 1. 10 rebounds, 2 steals, and 3 blocks. That was the making of a very sexy line if he didn't miss almost every single shot that he took. Just a horrendous, horrendous shooting night from Nurk, while Lillard struggled. 14 points on 18 shots. The 7 rebounds and 2 steals are out of the ordinary. But man, imagine you had Nurkic and Lillard on your team. That is disgusting. 33 field goal attempts, 5 makes. That is tough to recover from. On to the Grizzlies. Wouldn't you know it, they won. And Jaren Jackson Jr. played 31 minutes, 14-6 for Triple J, 2 triples, 1 steal, and 2 blocks. He's back. Hopefully he's back and remains back. Jermichael Green hustled his way nicely, but only got the 23 minutes. The defense from Jermichael Green has been impressive, 2 steals and 2 blocks, and didn't miss a shot. He does have that borderline 12-team league value. He's a Jeremy Grant type who's got zero upside and is going to have some shitter nights coming up, but yeah, solid enough. While Marc Gasol still can't shoot, 9 points on 15 shots, but 7 rebounds, 5 assists, 1 steal and 6 blocks. And Joakim Noah is helping him. He's helping the team in terms of lightening his load, but it means that that sell-high window very firmly closed for Gasol a while ago. Conley had 23-6-6 after that hamstring issue, while 4-12 for Kyle Anderson. On to the next game, we're looking at the Atlanta Hawks and the Dallas Mavericks. The Mavericks win again at home. It's going to be interesting to see whether they can get their third win on the road against the Suns on Thursday. The Mavericks 114, the Hawks 107. Trae Young is back. 24 points, 10 assists, and 2 steals. He was out. I did on the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Fast Break, I did the top 20 rookies over the last 2 weeks. Trae Young wasn't in it. He was the 24th best rookie over that time because the shot has struggled. It was always going to bounce back to a degree. Maybe not to this level at 55%, but the 10 assists, the 2 steals, 24 points. If he is on your wire, I am adding him. You do have to watch for the field goal percentage. It's not as bad as what some people make out that it is. It's bad, no doubt about it. But you know, it is something where I'd be looking to add him and see how this improvement goes. I think he will get better. He's shooting about, 28%, I think, on threes for the season, which is piss poor and is pretty clearly, in my opinion, going to improve as the season goes on. Kent Bazemore's a must-roster guy, at least until the artist formerly known as Taurean Prince returns, 22-5-1 with two steals, while my man Kevin Huerta, who on that fast break I mentioned was the third best rookie over the last 2 weeks, he just dropped a casual 19-1 with one assist, one steal, one block, four triples and played 36 minutes. He is, I believe, a must-roster guy, and is rostered in 2% of Yahoo League, so everyone else is just too busy with their hand on their dick in all other leagues to add him. He needs to be added in every single 14, 16, 18, 20, 30 team league, and a good chunk of 12 teamers as well. The Baptist John Collins had 20-17, while the Undertaker Dwayne Dedman played 32 minutes and had 9-6. Strong numbers from the Undertaker, DeAndre Bembry, 0 points, but 5 rebounds, 3 assists. To me, it's a clear Huerta over Bazemore, over Bembry in terms of those wings there on the Hawks. For the Mavericks, the pencil Harrison Barnes had 25-3 with very little else, while Luka Doncic continues to struggle with his shot, but 24-10-6, a steal and a block. Another indication, while I'm always happy to punt field goal percentage because you can just get so many other positive numbers for guys like high usage players like Doncic. We had no Dennis Smith Jr., no Dirk Nowitzki, who didn't make his season debut, and then Barea got hurt. The burner, Jalen Brunson, couldn't keep up that 60% shooting. I don't think anybody would be too surprised there. Struggled a bit here, 5 points in 23 minutes, and it's not really an ad outside of dynasty formats. Wesley Matthews had a shoulder issue, but did return to the game, had 3 steals in his 28 minutes, while DeAndre Jordan, subpar, 11-11, man. He just cannot block shots anymore. It's done with him. The next game was a blowout. The Miami Heat losing to the Utah Jazz, 111-84. I don't know. Okay, let's go. First of all, the Hassan Whiteside conspiracy theorist, he'll be back on Friday. I don't think that he's coming back to an 18-minute roll off the bench and Bam Adebayo is the starter moving forward.
Bam! 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 Bam!
I could be wrong. I don't think I am. There'll be nights where Whiteside sits out the fourth quarter. There'll be nights where he pisses and moans about his playing time. But in general, he is going to be the starting center, in my opinion. And Bam will be the backup, and the minutes will fluctuate. And he still hold on to Adebayo, who wasn't great here, 3-5 with a steal and 2 blocks in 27 minutes. But I think in a week's time, we're going to get to that situation where he plays 18 minutes, 18 minutes, 24 minutes, 18 minutes, and you see that, yeah, okay, Whiteside's back in there, and nothing's happening. We'll see. Derek Jones Jr., who had 3 steals, 3 blocks last game, he just came out with the casual 8-4 with 5 steals in this game. Just really racking up the defensive numbers. A deeper league sort of a player. Tyler Johnson started and is piss poor. 22 minutes. I wouldn't be stunned if him and the Duke Wayne Ellington are both out of the rotation when Whiteside and Dragic return. Well, Justice Winslow, I did express skepticism that perhaps the high percentage shooting wasn't going to be able to remain. He had 9-4-2 on 33% shooting and back to that guy that we've seen through his first 3 seasons. I don't see him as a must roster guy. You can still roster him. Dragic is out and he's playing. He has been playing well and it's been a hot streak. I'm just not sure that it continues at that sort of a level. Dwayne Wade also had a stinker in this one. Onto the Jazz, the Donovan Mitchell, 21 in 26 minutes. And the Jazz, the minutes were all kept really low. Jay Crowder started over Derek Favors. I don't think there's really anything to take away from this Jazz game. They just pummeled the Heat really early and they were able to get their big players some pretty significant rest. So, yeah, nothing to really talk about there too much with the Utah Jazz. Actually, one thing I do need to talk about with the Heat is Kelly Olynyk, 14-8 with 2 steals. Him and Bam are playing very, very well in that front court, and Whiteside coming back is going to have an impact on Olynyk, no doubt. So adding him now might be a little bit too late, but he's playing nicely, and I think that, again, he'll be preferred to Ellington and Johnson. Play more Winslow at the guard positions and have him, James Johnson, Hassan Whiteside, and Bam Adebayo soak up all 96 of those front court minutes with Winslow, Richardson, Scooter Magruder, and Dwayne Wade and Dragic take those guard and wing minutes. Not really a 12-10 league guy, because I think it's going to get squeezed pretty heavily. The next game, the Minnesota Timberwolves lost to the Sacramento Kings, a high-scoring 141-130. Townsie had 19-11 with 3 blocks. That's what we want. Wigo had 25 points with 2 steals, but still an unfathomably bad 2 rebounds and 1 assist. At least he shot the ball well. Well, Dario Saric, this is 2 good games in a row for Saric, 18-6 with a steal. I am yet to be convinced that Tom Thibodeau is only going to play his son Taj Gibson 17 minutes a night, but this is 2 nights in a row of 17 minutes. Now, Saric is the better player, in my opinion. He's a good player. Would I add him in 12-team leagues? I probably wouldn't. It would depend on my format and who I'd be dropping. If I had Alan Crabb to pull a name randomly out of the hat, I'd consider it because I just don't really view Hat Crabb as a great option. And I'd see where this goes with Šarić, but I don't foresee great numbers for him. Derrick Rose continues his quest to be the greatest shooter in the world. 20 points on 62% shooting with 4 assists, but struggled defensively, only played 22 minutes, while Teague had 12 and 13.
My name is Jeff.
On to the Kings. Yogi Ferrell, out of nowhere. 17 points with 6 assists, 5 of 6 shooting. He could very easily be out of the rotation in 4 or 5 games. That was a weird one. Bagley had 17 and 10, while Bogdan Bogdanovic, 25 and 6. He needs to be rostered in every single league. Budrick had 20 points, while De'Aaron Fox, a weird... Only 9 shot attempts for Foxy in this one, 13, 2, and 8. And Cauley Stein had 14 and 8 with 2 blocks. The last game of the night, the Toronto Raptors smacked the Golden State Warriors, and they did it without the fun guy.
I'm a fun guy.
They also did it with Jonas Valanciunas getting injured. To be fair, the Warriors did have no Andre Iguodala, but Kawhi versus Iguodala, it's a little bit different. Kyle Lowry's slump is over, 23, 5, and 12 with 3 steals. Turns out when a player who is a solid player shoots 20% for 4 or 5 games, it shouldn't be considered real, and that's the case. Serge Ibaka, 20 and 12 with 2 blocks. I think he's going to get some extra playing time, but the guy that we need to pay attention to in deeper leagues...
As Greg runs in, we realise this could get dangerous.
Ah yes, Greggy Munro. I think in 16-team leagues, he can have an impact with Valanciunas out. It also gives a bump to the best player in the NBA, Pascal Siakam, 13, 3, and 3 with 2 steals and a block, and continues to impress every single game, while the Jedi, OG Anunoby.
Hello there.
He's struggling in a pretty big way at the moment, 4-3 in 19 minutes. I still have faith for him, but it hasn't been great. Freddie VanVleet, credit to him as well, 10-3-2 with 3 steals and 2 triples. With these injuries at the moment, he is providing borderline 12-team value. I'm not adding him in every scenario. Durant had 37-5, so good night from him. But the other Warriors struggled. Just 2 points for Draymond with 7 assists, 2 steals, and 3 blocks. The prototypical punt points guy. While the astronaut Steph Curry, just the 10 points in 33 minutes in a uncharacteristically poor shooting night from Steph. Klay also 14 points on 17 shots. They just couldn't do shit in this game. Kevon Looney is losing playing time to Yunus Jarepko. Still had the defensive numbers, and that's all you want him for. 2 blocks and a steal, and that's the only 12-team league value he's buying. But only 20 minutes, and Boogie's going to be back, I would guess. My guess for Boogie all along has been, I think, the 31st of December or 1st of January, around that time. It still remains to be that time, and then Looney loses a shit ton of value when Boogie eventually gets back into the action. All right, that'll wrap up the action from Thursday's games. Wednesday's games? Man, the days, they're all blending into one. Let's talk some DFS by looking at the perfect lineup with DraftKings starting. Johnny Wall, CJ McCollum, Nemanja Bjelica, Thaddeus Young, Tony Davis, Kyle Lowry, Jeff Green, and Furkan Korkmaz for a total of $428.75, and that cost $49,600. And on FanDuel, your perfect lineup was Johnny Wall, Spencer Dinwiddie, Korkmaz, Galloway, Bjelica, Jeff Green, Tone Davis, Thad Young, and Joel Embiid, and that was $459.5 for a grand total of $59,600. All right, guys, let's look at the DFS action for Thursday now. We have got... how many games have we got on? We have got 4 games on Thursday, just trying to get my bearings there. The first one of those, we're going to be looking at FanDuel pricing today as well for this slate. The first game we look at is the Los Angeles Lakers traveling to take on the Houston Rockets. No Brandon Ingram in this one to throw punches, no Rajon Rondo to start shit. So we'll see exactly how this goes down. Not sure who Chris Paul's going to spit on, but we'll see how this all happens here in Houston. The Rockets favored by 5 points, the total 226. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope has been rumored to be moving to the Houston Rockets. Is he potentially auditioning for his new team? I guess we'll see. Brandon Knight, interestingly, for the Rockets has been upgraded to probable, and we've heard Mike D'Antoni talk about Knight recently. There could be an opportunity for him to find his way into the rotation, especially with Jim Ennis sidelined for the next couple of weeks with that hamstring issue. Let's look at this one from the point guard perspective. Chris Paul's shooting has struggled recently. He's at 8,200, but he did drop 50 points last game. He does play well against the Lakers in general. He's not a bad guy to have a look at, especially against this Lakers team, whose defense has been quite good, but Paul is averaging 46 against the Lakers the last 3 times. I think he's a solid enough guy with, I guess, maybe limited upside here, while Lonzo Ball at 7,300. Now, Lonzo exceeded that number in his last outing, 38 points. I think that's just a little bit too high for Ball with the uncertainty certainty of how Luke Walton's going to deploy him. The shooting guards is where I really like the value. Josh the Hitman Hart, 4,500. He's been a bit up and down in replacing Brandon Ingram, but in the games he's played against Houston in his career, he's averaging 33 points. That's a good start. And he's going to get that starting job again in this game with an opportunity to push past 25 or 26 points. Jimmy Harden's at 11,500. His last few games have been definitely disappointing for him, averaging just 36 points across the last three, but has made a history of putting up big games against the Lakers, and I expect Harden to get back on track in this one. While KCP, I mentioned him earlier, he's at 4,100. He's been getting you 20, 21 points a game recently. That's solid enough at that salary. Not a bad guy to put in as that cheap price player on FanDuel with that potential to drop the lowest score the way that FanDuel does run their system. Now, of course, that small forward,
LeBron James.
He is at, actually, probably before I get to him, let's talk Eric Gordon, who's at 5,100. The projections really like him. I don't really like him that much. He's likely going to start. I think if you're going to use Eric Gordon, and I would consider it just because of how much the projections do like him here and the real boost that he can get based on matchup and opposition, he's only for GPPs. I just don't like what he does alongside Harden and Paul in that starting lineup. As for LeBron, 11,700, I feel like you should feel pretty happy with LeBron as a solid cash play, a really, really solid cash play on this limited slate. The other small forwards, you've got Gerald Green, who'd be my interesting tournament guy at 4,100, ahead of guys like Lance Stephenson or Daniel House. At power forward, PJ Tucker, I think we can pretty safely ignore. While the future MVP, Kyle Kuzma, his salary is now up to 7,900. With good reason. His lowest score over his last five has been 39 points, averaging 43 over the last five. Taking that all that on board, 7,300 or 7,900 seems like a strong price. I'm not totally there on it, but it's definitely not one that we can totally ignore. JaVale McGee's numbers have been limited, averaging 25 over the last three, and at 5,800, I wouldn't want to spend that on JaVale, while Clint Capella, 9,100, also feels just a little bit high for Clint, especially with his numbers also reducing, and Nene playing those big minutes last game due to Capella getting in foul trouble. I wouldn't be using Nene or Tyson Chandler in this match, and I don't think that needs needs a huge discussion at all. Let's move on to, let's have a look actually at how this looks over on DraftKings for this game. I like quite a lot of guys here. Lonzo at 5,600 in a much better spot on DraftKings. The Hitman, Josh Hart, and JaVale McGee, one of the bigger discrepancies. 4,500 for JaVale, interested on him. Capella, Harden, and LeBron, all strong plays on DraftKings, while Eric Gordon still remains that very interesting GPP upside sort of play. The next game we look at is the LA Clippers taking on the San Antonio Spurs. The Spurs are 1.5-point favorites after the Clippers got thumped by the Raptors last time out. The total is 225. The Clippers are flailing a little bit. They've been on the road quite a bit. Lou Williams is out with a hamstring injury. The Spurs should be welcoming back Davis Bertans as well. He's listed as probable for this game. So interesting that the Spurs are favorites, but some value definitely appearing in this game. Patrick Beverley was terrible against the Raptors, just 5.6 FanDuel points. At 4,600, I'd be happy to go back to that well against him, getting these extra minutes with Williams sidelined. Same with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander at 5,700, but I wouldn't feel comfortable utilizing these guys as cash plays. While Bryn Forbes feasted on the Suns at 43 points he had, that was fantastic. Now, he is still a minimum salary player, so I think you do have to look at Forbesy, but if we look analytically, if we look unbiased to what Forbes has done, his last five games, he's averaged 20 points, and that's including a 43-point performance in there. So the other ones, they were pretty terrible. He is a little bit up and down. The Clippers' defensive backcourt pairing of Shea and Beverly is a lot different to the Phoenix Suns and whatever they tried out, although D'Anthony Melton's quite a good defender. I think you look at Forbes, but you look at him more for a tournament, while Derek White, not sure he's going to remain starting with Davis Bertans back. He was pretty strong in that game against the Suns as well, dropping 26 points, but I think that's a stay-away situation. Shooting guard Avery Bradley, man, he's averaging 9 points the last three games. 9 FanDuel points, not even real life points. He has been atrocious. I find it hard to get behind him. Ballinelli not interested. While DeMar DeRozan at 9,600. Prior to that Suns game, which was a really weird game in general, he'd been putting up really strong numbers, averaging 43 over his last five. I think he can get back to a 40-plus guy, which on a limited four-game slate is absolutely worth looking at. Small forwards, Rudy Gay's at 6,400, really churning out the big numbers of late, averaging over 30 in his last five. I feel relatively safe about his floor in this game, while the Rooster at 7,200, Danilo Gallinari, that is. I'd take Gay over the Rooster just because of that price discrepancy. For the power forwards, LaMarcus Aldridge is at 8,400. His last few games haven't quite been there, but a good record against the Clippers, and again, a limited slate, a good matchup, would lead me to go back to LaMarcus. I think his roster percentage will be down, and Toby Harris shit the bed against Toronto. Just the 14 points in that one. He is at $8,000. I think it's pretty good for Toby. I'd take LaMarcus over him for just $400 more, but I think Toby is looking at a bounce back. While the table, Montrezl Harrell at 6,700. He's been terrible as of late, averaging under 20 points for his last five games. I'll let someone else deal with that issue. Jakob Poeltl at 4,100. He's churning out the 20-point games, which makes him an okay cash guy. If you get you that 20, that can actually make up that 4,100 salary. While the Clippers centers between Boban and Marcin Gortat, if you're going to use one, it's for tournaments, and it is going to be Boban, but I don't think you should feel confident about any of those centers. Onto DraftKings, I like Beverly Aldridge, Toby Harris, and Danilo Gallinari, while Shea at 4,700 is an interesting GPP guy. And I think they've reduced Avery Bradley enough where I'd at least consider him for GPPs. He's at 3,500 on DraftKings, and that is obviously a very cheap price for Avery Bradley. Next up, we look at the Chicago Bulls and the Orlando Magic. This game is going to be in Mexico City. The Magic are favored by 4, and the total is 212 points. Evan Fournier missed last game. He's likely to return here, while Johnny Simmons is dealing with an ankle injury, so he is currently listed as questionable. At the moment, we'll see exactly how that pans out. If Johnny Simmons is out, that means more minutes for Wesawundu, but more likely Terrence Ross and John Isaac get a couple of extra minutes there as well. For the point guards, DJ Augustin at 4,700 has really been disappointing, but we've seen what players can do against the Bulls regularly. If you want to go revenge game, he used to play for the Bulls. It's a good matchup for DJ. I think he'd just be a tournament sort of a player. While Chris Dunn returns, and he is going to be, his second game back, he's going to remain on the bench in the 5,400. It would only be tournaments that I'd be interested in using him. Shooting guards, Fournier is at 6,000 and Terry Ross is at 55. I think both of those guys are probably a little bit overpriced, although I'd go with Ross if Johnny Simmons happens to be ruled out, while Zach LaVine at 8,100. LaVine is giving you just 27 FanDuel points the last three games. Not great. Clearly, it is a decent matchup for LaVine and limited options available. He is okay to look at, but you know, if you're looking at high price guys, Toby Harris and LaMarcus Aldridge in that $8,000 range, I'd probably prefer those guys over Zach LaVine. Justin Holiday's at 54. His production has also been reduced and the salary is probably just a little bit too high. Johnny Isaac at 51, I'd like him more for tournaments if Simmons happens to be ruled out. Otherwise, he's a little bit tough to rely upon with his inconsistency. While power forwards, you've got the two Bulls guys, Wendell Carter Jr. and Lauri Markkanen at 63 and 6,600 respectively. Both of those guys have been struggling to get to that number on a consistent basis. Power forwards have struggled against the Magic this season for whatever reason, and I think both of those guys would just be tournament guys. While As Gordon at $8,000 for the Magic, I'd feel better about using him in cash, especially with the way the Bulls struggle to handle any sort of big men at all. Nick Vucevic, that's why I think he's one of the better plays on the board as a big man. 8,800, we know big men against the Bulls is a great option. This is a great option. Vuce has been killing it regardless, and this should be a 40-plus point performance with realistic expectations to get to 50 or 50-plus. While Mo Bamba at 39.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah. Don't really think there's much to see there with Bamba. He was suspended last game and he'll be back in the rotation. But big men against the Bulls, could Bamba come out and put up a big one? That is a real possibility. So just keep an eye on Bamba, and maybe you throw him into one of your GPPs. The DraftKings situation here, Carter at 5,200 is a nice tournament guy. LaVine at 74 is more appealing, and Vuce at 89 also looks pretty good. And the same sort of stuff applies for Augustin, Johnny Isaac, and Terry Ross, while Lowry at 6,500, Lauri Markkanen, probably just a little bit high there for Lowry. Let's go on to the last game of the night, the only game involving a back-to-back. It's the Dallas Mavericks against the Phoenix Suns. The Mavericks, we've got to check the status of JJ Barea. I think it's doubtful that he plays. He got injured on Wednesday. He wasn't able to return. The x-rays were negative there for him in that game that they ended up getting the victory over the Hawks, where Rick Carlisle got himself ejected. So, earlier in the season, the Mavericks did get beaten by the Suns, and that was pretty weird. I would expect them to reverse that course here, but on a back-to-back, with a team we don't know the status of Dennis Smith Jr. and a team that's won only two games on the road, it could be an interesting one here for Dallas, an opportunity here for Phoenix to at least get a victory. Devin Booker is ruled out. So De'Anthony Melton at 6,000. I'm all in on De'Anthony Melton. Happy to use him here. Well, Smith at 5,500. Now, if Dennis Smith is available to play, I would smash that at 5,500. Otherwise, Jalen Brunson is going to be our guy to have a look at against this Phoenix team. He's going to have a real opportunity to be a cash lock player. Elia Kobo, he might return from the G League. We don't know yet, but I'm not ready to go in with him yet. At shooting guard, Doncic at 7,400. Happy, it's a great matchup for Donch, so I'm happy to go there with him. 5,300 for Wesley Matthews is more of a GPP guy. We saw Brittany Forbes destroy the Sun, so anything is possible, and Wes could be a tournament player. Mikal Bridges is at 4,800. Booker's absence does help him in this game, but it would still just be for tournaments. While Tony Warren Jr. at 6,400. I think he's a pretty strong cash play, actually, in this one against Dallas on that back-to-back. The 5,700 for Harrison Barnes, he's not living up to it at the moment, but again, this opportunity here against Phoenix could push him over that, but I'd only be looking at Barnsley as a tournament player. Power forwards, you've got Joshy Jackson at 5,500. He was dreadful in that start last game. Now, we don't have any word as to whether Trevor Ariza will actually play in this game after they sat him out without any explanation last game. Could it be they sat him out because it was a back-to-back or because the trade's in place? We just haven't heard word of that yet. Jackson at 55, I think, is a relatively strong option. He did shit the bed for the Suns last time with only 18 points. But, you know, high 20s is a realistic floor. I think you all know 25 is probably a realistic floor here for Jackson with an ability to go for 30, 35. And that makes him appealing. 4,800 for Rashawn Holmes is not really doing it for me. And then you got the centers. DeAndre Ayton at 7,400. I like Ayton here in this matchup. I'd be happy to use him in cash. And DeAndre Jordan loves centers against the Suns. 7,200 for DeAndre. I'm happy to go there. I think this is a 35 plus pointer for DeAndre. We may also see Dirk Nowitzki's return. We haven't seen him play yet. He was questionable for today, then was ruled out. So we'll have to see exactly how if Dirk is ready to return to action for his first game of the season. That would be great if we could see him out there. Let's go through the studs and values on DraftKings. I love Vooch at 8,900. That's going to be a common refrain through these. On DraftKings, the value play, I like Patrick Beverley at 3,600. FanDuel, my stud is Vooch at 88, and my value is the hitman Josh Hart at 4,500. On Yahoo, my stud is Nick Vucevic at 3,600, and my value is De'Anthony Melton at $14. And on DraftStars, is it Nick Vucevic? No, it's LeBron James.
A surprise, to be sure, but a welcome one.
He's at 19,070. I love LeBron in this one against Houston. While the value is Josh the Hitman Hart at 7,030. That'll wrap it up for today's show, guys. Make sure you're checking out our sponsor, Action Heat, actionheat.com/lockedon for 20% off your order. Follow me on Twitter at redrock_beeble and subscribe to this podcast so you never miss an episode. We've got the Locked On, the regular show, which I'm doing now, and those mini shows that I'm doing, which I am going to be calling thanks to, I wish I could remember your name, I had it in front of me, who suggested that I call them the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast Fast Breaks. That's what we're going to call them. 15 to 20 minute show, just giving quick fantasy check-ins on teams and doing top 20 lists and stuff like that. So check that out. And the only way to find those is by subscribing and making sure you never miss an episode. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Spencer Dinwiddie.